Hello everyone and welcome to the Banter Roundtable podcast. This is your host, Ben Cohen.
And I'm Justin Rosario.
The Banter Roundtable podcast is brought to you by the Banter Newsletter. We rely on our generous subscribers to keep going, so please support us by signing up for a Banter membership today. You can get a 50% discount when you join the community, and you'll get access to all our premium articles and locked archive. We will also be supporting independent, responsible media at a crucial time when our democracy is in peril. Your support is greatly appreciated.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 110 of the Banter Roundtable podcast. I'm here today with Justin Rosario. Justin, sir, how are you?
I am doing fantastic.
We do have a great show for you today. That's probably why you're excited, Justin, why you're in such a good mood.
Oh, yeah.
So, in the show today, Biden is rolling in money and Trump is, it's not good. Speaking of the former president, he's hiring known Russian agent Paul Manafort to his campaign because what could go wrong? Trump is also threatening violence again. The Supreme Court is letting Texas persecute minorities. We have our corrupt weasels of the week. And then in the Emergency Meeting podcast, it's Ben's revenge on the Twitter files story. So please stay tuned for that. This is going to be a good one. If you want to join us in the Emergency Meeting, please get yourself a Banter membership. You can get 50% off and you can join us there. It's the best way to support the Banter. If you like what we do, it also gets you access to everything, all of our paid articles, our member chat threads, and the Emergency Meeting podcast. And we will love you forever. So please get yourself a Banter membership. We really, really appreciate it. And it makes a huge difference. So the first story of the week, this is our Ray of Sunshine story. We're starting with the Ray of Sunshine story because Joe Biden is actually rolling in money. He's rolling in cash. Like, the fundraising is going phenomenally well.
It's an obnoxious amount of money.
Yeah. What was the number at now? It was 150. What was it?
150 million, 53 of it just in February.
That's astonishing. Right.
Yeah.
And the DNC is outraising the RNC by an order of, you know,
it's like, I don't know, at least 2-1.
Yeah.
If not more.
So this is not. I know we say this every week, these things are not looking good for Trump, right? But this is, money makes a difference in elections. It really does.
Annoyingly so, yes.
It does. It shouldn't. Basically, there is a kind of an almost unlimited amount of money that goes into campaigns now, thanks to the Citizens United ruling. But it is, you know, unfortunately how American elections work. But it is good that Biden is outraising Trump significantly, even though Trump is on full, you know, he's on full grift mode, trying to milk as much money as he can out of his idiot supporters, and now basically bankrupting the RNC. You did a fantastic piece this week on what Trump is doing to the RNC.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I mean, please read it, everybody. You need to read Justin's piece on this, right? Because he is basically taken over the RNC. And he's going to bankrupt them.
Yeah, it's weird. The Washington Post wrote about it. Like, you know, it's like, oh, they're merging the RNC and the Trump campaign to increase efficiency. And it's like, no, he's not.
Increase efficiency. That's hilarious.
Increase efficiency in his grifting. It's like, I don't know what else you think you're talking about here, but it's not efficiency in political terms. It's straight up how much he can loot and how quickly he can loot it.
Yeah, so Trump is hemorrhaging money, seriously.
That's the other important thing here. It's not just that Trump isn't raising nearly as much money as Biden. It's that the money he's raising, of which he's spending more than he's bringing in, and it's all going, not all of it, but almost all of it is going to his court cases. So Even though Biden's out raising him, Biden's not spending all his money on court cases, whereas Trump is. So the money gap is even larger than it seems on paper.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great piece on the CNBC website about Trump's campaign cash crunch. The headline is "Behind Trump's Campaign Cash Crunch: Small Donor Fatigue, Major Donor Hesitation." And the key point here are the key points. This is from Brian Schwartz at CNBC. The former President Trump is facing two major fundraising problems: a shortage of big money interest and a drop in small dollar donor fund support. The decline in small dollar contributors could be a significant obstacle as the former president seeks to cobble together a 2024 war chest. Small dollar donors are critical to Trump's ability to raise enough money to fund his presidential campaign. But the big donors are not dumping cash in either, because they know that this is not a great idea. This is not a great way to spend their money.
Right. It's a return on investment, and they're not going to get one. So why bother?
Yeah.
And here's so another big thing that the press does not want to talk about, right? They do mention it here, right? The small donors are getting burned out, right? Partly because Trump has been bilking them every day, every hour, every second for 8 years. He's been draining them of every penny. But also, they're just kind of like, enough.
This guy again, yeah. Yeah, there isn't as much enthusiasm around Trump. There really isn't.
No, you can kind of sense it.
Yeah, the people were kind of, this guy's the kind of a has-been, really.
But the flip side is that Biden, I mean, the $150 million and the $53 million, that's a lot of that is small donors. They said that he's got like 2 million small donors, 500,000 of them are new small donors. Right. These are people who have not donated before, or they didn't donate in 2020, which means that's a huge amount of enthusiasm, which is, you will not hear that from the press. They will not discuss that because, as far as they're concerned, everybody hates both candidates. No one wants this election. Everyone's just like sick of it, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, fundraising doesn't really reflect that, though, does it? But that's not what the narrative they want to push.
Right. I mean, if there was excitement around Trump's campaign, donations would be flooding in. There's no doubt about that.
Right. And we know that's not happening, even though we don't have all of the numbers, right? There's a bunch of, like, they don't have to tell us everything. Like, a lot of that information is not going to be released until April, where they have to report it. We know that's not happening because it's Trump, right? If Trump had good fundraising, he'd be bragging about it. And he's not, which means the numbers are terrible.
Numbers. So look, I pulled these stats up earlier, right? This is about the 2008 United States presidential election. And this was Obama outraised John McCain basically 2-1. Right? He raised $778 million compared to John McCain's $383 million. But there was massive amount of excitement around Obama's campaign, and that was reflected in the amount of money he raised.
Right.
And so if you're looking at the Trump campaign, the numbers are awful, which, you know, there is a direct correlation between amount raised and excitement around the candidate.
Now, people will be quick to point out that Hillary also outraised Trump, but Trump also got...
Well, like, Hillary actually won the popular vote too, so.
Right, but Trump also got like 10 times as much free media as Hillary did. I mean, they did studies on that. He got like, I think they said somewhere in the area of $2 billion worth of free media because the news, the press would not stop pointing cameras at him because he got great ratings. So they were just like, oh, Trump is sneezing? We're going to do an hour-long special about Trump sneezing. They didn't do that to Hillary.
Yes, there is true. I mean, look, Trump's a bit... The one thing Trump does have going for him is like his rallies, right? This is a big thing for him. He goes around the country. He's good at touring the country and holding these rallies and doing these kind of like fascist speeches, which he's really good at. Even though, I mean, I don't see the appeal myself, obviously. You know?
Yeah, I can't imagine why you, a Jew, wouldn't be comfortable at a Nazi rally. I don't get it. Why, Ben? Why do you hate Nazis, Ben?
Yeah. Exactly.
Why are you so anti-Nazi?
The problem is, when it's time to do all these big campaign things, Trump's going to be in court.
Oh.
So, yeah, slight problem. It's a slight problem for him. He's really hamstrung this election. And Biden's been mocking him about his inability to finance himself as well. So that's quite funny as well.
But he's a billionaire.
Yeah, he should be able to pay, right? Obviously, he can't raise, what is it for? He can't raise the half a billion. He's basically begging his supporters to bail him out.
Good
luck. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. So look, yeah, this is obviously excellent news. But who has Trump hired?
Wait. Hold on. We didn't talk about the fact that he actually can't raise that $464 million.
Yeah, he can't. So they're going to... What happens then if he can't afford that, right? He's going to get... They're going to start seizing his assets.
Well, see, now that's the thing. Now, he wants to appeal the ruling, right? But you have to be able to put up the money. And he can't do it. He tried. He couldn't, right? According to his lawyer, he went... This is a quote. About 30 surety companies through four separate brokers. A surety company is... It's a company that provides a line of credit to guarantee payment of any claim. So it's not really a bank, but so it helps you pay off different types of claims, whatever they are, right? And nobody wanted to do it. Everyone they all said, no way, right? So they're not willing to give him the money, and they wouldn't allow him to use his real estate as collateral, right? Because they wanted the money. They wanted, you got to give us some money up front to do this. Not, obviously, he wouldn't have to give like the whole $464 million. Like, when you go to get a bail bond, if your bail is $10,000, you don't give the bail bondsman $10,000. You give them a percent of it. So right. Whatever the percent that these companies wanted, Trump couldn't even give that much, right? Say if they asked for 10%. Or 30%, he couldn't even give that much of it. He didn't have the liquid assets to do it, and they wouldn't accept his real estate as collateral. Now, we don't know if it's because real estate is hard to just unload. Like, if you're a company, you don't want to say someone to give you, here's a skyscraper. It's yours now. Well, because now you have to deal with the skyscraper, right? You have to deal with all the upkeep while you're trying to sell it, blah, blah, blah. That's not right. Really in your best interest, especially if you can't sell it. Now you're stuck with it. No. Why would you take on that risk? But it also could be that, as long rumored, Trump properties are leveraged, heavily leveraged, which means he doesn't own them really. They're his, but he only owns part of it, and the rest of it is, he owns the money. He owes money to this one. He owes money to that one. It's a $100 million building, but $90 million of it is in loans to other people. So that's going to be a problem. If Letitia James starts seizing his buildings and 90% of it is owned by other people and other institutions, Trump only gets 10% of that, right? Because right. That's he only has 10% of that is his, which means she's gonna have to seize an awful lot of his properties in order get the $464 million that he owes, which would be catastrophic. So
his business, yeah, absolutely.
That's that's as of Monday. He has to cough this up as of Monday. And of course, and we're about to discuss it, right? We're about to discuss Paul Manafort. But Alina Habba, his idiot lawyer, someone just asked her whether or not he's looking to Russia or Saudi Arabia for this money. And she didn't say no. She just said, I can't discuss that. And it's like, oh my God, because he's asking. And they've got the money. And if we discussed this last week, who owns Donald Trump? If someone hands him $500 million and he's still running for president, you can't have that.
Right. We need to know where that money's coming from.
Which brings us to our next topic.
I mean, this is extraordinary. This just broke this like today, right?
It was a couple of days ago. They were talking, like Rachel Maddow talked about this on Monday.
Okay. So This is from the Washington Post. Former President Donald Trump is preparing to bring back into his campaign fold a man convicted of multiple crimes and whom a bipartisan Senate report labeled a grave counterintelligence threat because of his ties to a Russian spy. It sounds like an uncharitable summary, but that's about the size of it. This is the Washington Post reporting. So the Washington Post, Josh Dorsey, reported Monday that Trump plans to hire this guy. Four people close to Trump said he was expected to hire Manafort as a campaign advisor later this year, with potential jobs centering on the Republican National Convention and or fundraising. While Trump has shelved plans to hire certain people after backlashes, think far-right provocateur Laura Loomer, he's reportedly determined to rehire Manafort. I wonder why.
I can't even imagine. Now, for our audience who may not quite remember who Paul Manafort is, Paul Manafort is a guy who spent quite a number of years running around Eastern Europe helping Putin destabilize the governments of Eastern Bloc countries in order for Putin-friendly oligarchs to take over those countries and to keep them aligned with Russia. That was his job. He funneled Russian money into these countries in order to keep Putin-friendly dictators and to undermine Putin-not-friendly democracies. That was his entire function. And then, one day, he shows up at the Trump campaign and works for him for free. I'll just help you run your campaign. You don't have to pay me. And wouldn't you know it? The Trump campaign becomes extremely Putin-friendly, and Paul Manafort, now, this is not in question. We know this happened. This is not, and Matt Taibbi and Glenn Greenwald can kiss my entire ass because we know this happened. Paul Manafort funneled a lot of campaign information from the Trump campaign that was not public. He funneled it to Russia. And, wouldn't you know, they were really good at targeting their disinformation based on certain campaign information they wouldn't have been able to get their hands on if it was not for Paul Manafort. And, look at that. Paul Manafort's coming back just in time for the election, where Trump really desperately needs to win and he needs a lot of money.
Can I just read? I'm just going to read the key findings from the Senate report. Okay. The committee found that this is from the Washington Post. The committee found
bipartisan Senate report.
Exactly. Yeah. The committee found that Manafort's presence on the campaign and proximity to Trump created opportunities for the Russian intelligence services to exert influence over and acquire confidential information on the Trump campaign. Number two, the committee assesses that Russian intelligence officer Konstantin Kilimnik likely served as a channel for Manafort for Russian intelligence services, and that those services likely sought to exploit Manafort's access to gain insight info the campaign. Kilimnik has denied ties to Russian intelligence. Point three, taken as a whole, Manafort's high-level access and willingness to share information with individuals closely affiliated with the Russian intelligence services, particularly Kilimnik, represented a grave counterintelligence threat.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And again, I cannot stress this enough. This was a bipartisan. This was not just the Democrats and a Republican. This was a bunch of Republicans and the Democrats. They worked together and it wasn't like
You mean the deep state.
Yeah, clearly. It wasn't like a bunch of Republicans were like, no, this is all garbage. And it was just like a single Republican saying, no, that's what happened. It's like, no. This was like a consensus thing. There were very few people in the Senate who were like, "Hey, I'm not signing on to this." They were pretty much all on board. Like, yeah, that's kind of what happened. So, yeah, Paul Manafort works for Russia,
and he's back.
And back in 2016, when this was happening, everyone could be like, "Well, we don't really know. There's no, yeah, we don't." No. You know what? There's been 8 years now of this bullshit that's been very thoroughly studied. We know who these people are. So when fucking Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi throw another temper tantrum saying, it's just Russophobia, they can just go straight to hell. because they
it's clear. I mean, we're going to be talking about Matt Taibbi again in the emergency meeting podcast. But this again cuts into a lot of his quote unquote journalism, right? Where he believes, he just believes that the Russiagate story was a hoax, right? That he's based his entire career on this, or his the new chapter in his career on this story, right? That the Russia thing was a hoax. And he's beaten it to death. And he's created a little niche for himself of skeptics, of Russiagate skeptics. But look, I do think there was some hysteria on the left, right? There was some hysteria about the Russiagate story on the left, for sure. And there was some sloppy reporting. But by and large, the story is clear and stands up, right? There's a mountain of evidence. And again, bipartisan Senate report showed clearly there was Russians had influence on Trump's campaign.
Sort of weird. We're having a sequel to a story that didn't happen in the first place.
Yes, exactly.
This is like having the second Star Wars movie and pretending the first one never happened. Never, it's like, happened. No, there is no episode four. We're just watching episode five. It's like, what are you talking about?
Of course. So look, speaking of Donald Trump, Trump is threatening violence again. This was his speech. I wrote about this and Bob wrote about this on the Banter this week. This has created quite the media storm.
I know. It was so weird that they actually noticed. They actually said something about this, which is like, wow, you guys woke up.
Yeah. So this, I wrote about this in the fucking Monday column. This is the quote. This is what Trump said. Trump said, we're going to put, this is, it was a speech in Ohio. He said, we're going to put 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line. And you're not going to be able to sell those cars if I get elected. Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole, that's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories. So this created a huge media storm. Elon Musk and all right-wing Twitter and Republicans were outraged at the fact that the media reported on this. They literally quoted him and said he's using violent rhetoric again. And you know, there's a whole debate over, was he referring to the automobile industry? He clearly wasn't referring to the automobile industry, right? He clearly wasn't. He goes off on a tangent. He's talking about one thing, then he switches gear and he says, if I don't get elected, there's going to be a bloodbath. Is that a direct threat to cause a bloodbath? Maybe not. My reading of it was that he's priming his audience, right? He's using more and more violent rhetoric as the campaign nears, right? So that the Democrat, he's accusing the Democrats of basically creating a bloodbath in the country so that his supporters are primed to create their own bloodbath, if that makes sense.
No, well, that's literally what I've been writing for the last 8 years. If you could convince your side that the other side is doing something horrible, that they're the bad guys, that they're evil, that they're, you know, the worst possible villains imaginable, well, then anything that you do to them is okay. You're the hero. You know, that's why they call us pedophiles. That's why they call us commies. That's why they call us monsters. That's why they call, you know, we're out to destroy America. We're out to put them in concentration camps. If we're an existential threat to them, right? If it's us and them and we're an existential threat, if we literally are going to kill them, well, then it's okay if they kill us first because that makes them the hero. It's self-defense and they're allowed to do that. That's the point of it. That's the whole point of the violent rhetoric. It's to, one, to get them desensitized to the idea of violence, and also to put us in a position where we're the ones who are going to do it to them. So they have to do it to us first.
Yeah, and I mean, look, Bob did a good piece that came out on Thursday. You listened to this on Sunday, but this came out on Thursday, right? And Bob listed some times when Trump, you know, should we give Trump the benefit of the doubt? Like, no, right?
Never. We're so way past that.
Yeah. These are some of the threats that Bob listed that he said before, right? He threatened to chaos and bedlam if he had been removed from ballots. He instructed his fanboys to knock the crap out of protesters. He said it's okay for cops to bash the heads of suspects against the roof of patrol cars. He's ordering his militias to fight like hell on January 6th, which they did. Also, Judge McAfee had to postpone his Fannie Willis decision so he could prepare additional security for his family after receiving MAGA death threats. Trump's former Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, said Trump asked him whether he could shoot Black Lives Matter protesters in Washington, D.C., so he could have his Bible photo op. And then, of course, Trump is under a criminal indictment for inciting a violent insurrection. So it's not as if this is like out of left field somewhere, right? That this is not part of a long pattern of violent rhetoric. But apparently we've got Trump derangement syndrome and we're all hysterical over something, you know, an innocuous statement he made about the automobile industry.
Uh-huh. And this is the same speech where he said that, you know, some immigrants are not people. It's like, oh, okay, thank you. Thank you for going all in on the eliminationist genocidal talk. No problems there. Nothing to see there.
It's just deeply irresponsible but again, normalized under Trump, right? This is now, he's kind of expected to say this stuff. So everyone just goes, oh, well, you know, what are you going to do?
Now, the thing is, you mentioned earlier that, you know, his speeches, you know, he does them, he's going to be all over the place, but he is kind of devolving. Like, his speech is getting more and more violent. So the more he does this, the more violent he gets. That is going to, like, that's going to endear him to his white nationalist base. It's going to be quite repulsive to everybody else.
Yeah. Again, you know, my contention is that the election is going to be won by independents and the middle and the swing voters, and they're not going to vote for this guy.
They don't like him very much.
They're not going to vote for this guy. Not somebody who uses that kind of rhetoric. No way. Okay, look, the Supreme Court in Texas. This was not a great story.
Good God.
This was, okay, so what happened here? The Texas can ignore, apparently this is a SCOTUS ruling, Texas can ignore federal law and do what it wants. The law is basically, it allows police, including college campus police, to question the immigration status of anyone they detain or arrest. This includes drivers and passengers who have been pulled over for traffic stops, such as speeding or having broken taillights. Even victims and witnesses who talk to police when they haven't committed a crime are targets. It requires police chiefs and sheriffs to cooperate with federal immigration officials by honoring ICE detainer requests for deportation, or face $25,000 fines per day, jail time, or removal from office. This means that local jails must hold undocumented immigrants who have been detained until ICE can pick them up if ICE has requested it. Bloody hell.
Yeah, now the mess up thing about this, right, and the fact that, and they love doing this, right? They did this with the Arizona law, the Papers, Please law, which was like, what? Was that like 12 years ago? My God, it's been so long, right? Even victims and witnesses who talk to the police when they haven't committed a crime are targets. Well, that means that victims and witnesses aren't going to come forward. And that's the point, right? If you're a victim, you're not going to come forward. If you're a witness, you're not going to come forward, which means it increases crime. For the people who are like, we're anti-crime, we hate increased crime, this bill literally makes crime more likely to happen, but it makes it more likely to happen against undocumented migrants, which is the point. They want them to be victimized. And when you know that undocumented migrants are the people who could be most easily victimized, those are the people that get victimized more, right? So the idea is to create this permanent group of people who will be preyed upon by criminals because they know, well, who are they gonna go to? They can't go to the cops. What are they gonna do? They're not gonna go and point me out in a lineup because they're gonna get deported. So I can do anything I want, and that's the point of this, right? It's not just to deport people; it's to make their lives a living hell while they're here, and it's just the inhumanity and cruelty of it. But that's what they do. So.
The cruelty is the point.
Now, to continue, the Fifth Circuit said, yeah, go ahead, do this. And then SCOTUS, you know, it kept getting People kept suing and saying no. And then SCOTUS let it go into effect, which was completely bonkers insane, right? Because immigration is not for the states. That's a federal thing, right? That's their issue. That is something the federal government is supposed to take care of. And the Supreme Court said, whatever. We'll let the state take care of it, right? Which is in like complete contradiction to their ruling last month when they said, no, states actually can't take people off of the ballot. That's for federal, which is like, make up your mind, man. Which is it? Do states have rights or do states not have rights? But then 8 hours after SCOTUS said, go ahead, do it. The Fifth Circuit reversed itself and put it on hold again.
Jesus.
And it's just weird. None of these rulings said anything about the law itself or its constitutionality, right? Like, because it's still being litigated because they haven't, you know, they haven't decided if it's constitutional. Meanwhile, Mexico said, screw you, Texas. You may not dump random people into our country because that's part of the law. The law is we're going to take these people, even though we have no idea if they're immigrants or not, because you know they're just going to start grabbing people who speak Spanish off the street. And they're going to be like, I'm an American citizen. Do you have papers? No, I don't have my ID on me. Well, you're getting deported. They're definitely going to do this.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
And the law says, off to Mexico with you, even if they're not Mexican. And Mexico just said, no, absolutely not. Mm. And while the federal government can twist Mexico's arm and be like, yo, we're going to deport people to your country, Texas is a state, not a government, not a federal, not a country, which means when Mexico says, go fuck yourself, what's Texas going to do? Right? They don't have the clout that the United States government has. They're just a state. And the United States government is not going to, federal government's not going to step in and say, you really have to do, you know, it's not, they're not going to like walk over and pat Texas on the head like they're their kid and say, you really should do what Texas says. No, the federal government's going to be like, it's not my problem. You want to try and make Mexico do it? Go ahead. It's not going to happen. Mexico's not going to listen to anything that Texas has to say. Mexico's under no obligation to do a goddamn thing a bunch of redneck racist assholes want. It's just not going to happen. So I don't know how they're planning on enforcing this law. Are they going to try and sneak them back over the border? Good luck with that. I don't know what they're thinking.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past them. Well, look, let's move on to our corrupt weasels of the week. This is a new our new segment, corrupt weasels of the week. This is SCOTUS again in the hot seat. They're contemplating making political bribes completely legal. So this is, okay, this is from
Tom Hartman.
From Tom Hartman, says, James Snyder is the former mayor of Portage, Indiana, who federal prosecutors successfully argued in court rigged a city bidding process for $1.125 million worth of new dump trucks to help out a friend who sold such trucks. After the contract was awarded to his buddy, his friend's company gave a tip to Snyder of $13,000. Not a bad tip. Snyder is appealing his bribery conviction before the Supreme Court next month, and his main argument is that the federal definition of bribery must include an explicit advance agreement, a spoken or written quid pro quo, to exchange money or gifts for official actions, and that all this explicit agreement stuff must happen before the official acts are taken.
That's so insane. That is absolutely bonkers insane.
Yeah, so if the Supreme... But what happens if the Supreme Court agrees with this? I mean, they're about to listen to Trump's legal argument that he had complete presidential immunity because he was president.
Which means some of them are thinking, yeah, maybe. Otherwise, they would have said, no, we're not entertaining this argument at all.
Yeah, so the Supreme Court shouldn't be listening to this because it's nuts, but they are.
Right, which means at least some of them are willing to give it a go. And if the Supreme Court buys into this, everything will be for sale because politicians will work to earn quote unquote tips. And the more lavish the tip, the harder the politicians will work to please their patrons. They won't even have to ask for stuff anymore. Just because I mean, you know that fossil fuel industry is going to want you to make things easier for them. So you will do that. And then you'll show up and say, hey, I did good work for you. What you're going to do for me now? Right. Oh, here's your tip. You earned it. Oh, thanks. You don't have to ask. But even then, you'll just have, even if the rich in corporations, right? They'll just have people do weaselly mop talk for them. Say, hey, wouldn't it be nice if you voted in this particular way? My employer would be really grateful. You don't have to discuss the specifics. You don't have to say how much. You just have to let it be known. It's like, oh, boy, my employer would be very happy if this bill went away. Oh, the bill went away? Hey, thanks. Here's a big $40 million tip for your campaign. Blah, 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 blah. Right? And that's it. It's all over after that.
Yeah, again, more evidence that the Supreme Court is broken. It's a broken institution, and it needs to be reformed.
And Republicans badly. Are the ones who broke it.
Yep, of course. All right, look. So, we have a clip for you.
Oh, yeah, Trey, you got to play that clip.
We have a fantastic clip for you today. This is from Claudia L. Tenney, who's an American attorney and politician serving as the U.S. representative of New York's 24th congressional district since 2023. So she was on Fox News, and I just want you to listen to this because this is brilliant. Okay.
He has been violating classified documents cases or mishandling and inappropriately federal crimes for mishandling classified documents for decades, as cited by Special Counsel Hur. He has also been engaged in this influence peddling for decades, as we are going to, if we could have all the evidence, we could prove it.
Yeah.
If Donald Trump just did one of these things, right. He would be prosecuted. Right.
If we had all the evidence, we could prove it.
Wow.
And
if Donald Trump did one of these things, he'd be prosecuted. Actually, he's done some of those things, which is why he's being prosecuted.
Because we have the evidence, and Biden is not being prosecuted because there is no evidence. But if we could have all the evidence, we could prove it, right?
I mean, to be really clear, their entire case is falling apart. Their main witness turned out to be a Russian agent, and he admitted that it was all fabricated, that he lied about Biden being bribed. And that's why they're not going to impeach Biden, because they can't.
Right.
They don't have any evidence. Everything they brought forward either turned out to be a lie, or their witnesses disappeared, or they got arrested for a whole bunch of other stuff. And they have to stop trying to impeach him, which is why they're moving on to their next thing, which is the big shocking scandal of the Afghanistan war withdrawal. That's their new thing, because they have to give up the impeachment. Gosh. So, if only they had the evidence. That's kind of how it works. Yes. You had the evidence, you'd be able to prove there was a crime. Absolutely amazing.
On that note, we're going to be heading into the emergency meeting podcast, where we're going to be discussing my revenge on Matt Taibbi and Glenn Greenwald. No, this is amazing. So the entire basis of the Twitter file story has just been destroyed. But we're going to be talking about that in the emergency meeting podcast. Come and join us there. You can get 50% off a Banter membership. We would obviously love to have you as a Banter member. This is how we survive as a media entity. We're an independent media company, completely independent. We have no corporate backers, no advertising. We just rely entirely on your generosity. So please come and join us in the emergency meeting and listen to us riff on the destruction of the Twitter file story. And for everybody else, we'll see you next week.
Later.